And welcome to Dr. Drew Podcast, everybody. Blah, blah, blah. Support people, support us, et cetera, et cetera. Check out the Instagram site, et cetera. But I want to get right to my guest. I'm very excited. Welcome, Lisa Lampanelli.
Oh,
Lisa.
My God, Dr. Drew, my freaking hero.
That's ridiculous.
No, you're one of my inspirations, and I'll tell you why.
Okay.
Because you can be entertaining plus have meaning.
That's the idea. You got to get people into the tent and get their attention before you can deliver the goods.
Right.
Do you know, Adam and I used to have a specific philosophy about this. We called it, and you'll remember this product. A lot of people these don't remember it anymore, but Gainsburger. Remember Gainsburger?
Yes!
So Adam would always say, well, you know, if you want people, a dog to take a pill, you can't shove it down its throat too many times, but you wrap it in Gainsburger and they'll take it every time. So Gainsburger and the pill, that's the philosophy you've always used.
Right. So I feel now, like doing the things I'm doing now instead of comedy, that you still use humor. You get them in the room, and then you can actually make an impact. And they may leave going, oh, my God, I'm not as alone, or I learned something, or I like myself better.
Yes. Humor is a great conduit.
Oh, I thought you were going to say, like, lube.
No, well, it's the same idea, but it's a conduit. It gets you in. It helps people let you in with whatever it is you're trying to deliver.
Yeah.
So tell me the whole story. What happened?
Oh, okay. So you heard, which I loved. I did the Howard Stern show about 3-4 weeks ago.
Yes.
Because I felt like I was being very inauthentic, that I wasn't
Go ahead. That's Gary.
That I wasn't loving comedy anymore, but I hadn't said I'm not doing comedy anymore. So every time I do an interview, I'd be like, well, who knows? You know, I just don't have any dates right now. And I was like, fuck this. I don't want to be a comic anymore. I don't want to insult people anymore. I want to do food and body image workshops. I'm taking a life coaching 2-year course. I want to do what I want to do. And I just screamed at my manager and my publicist one day. And I was like, please let me announce it. And I went on Stern. And it was like magic. Everything starts falling into place. You called me, which I go, fucking Dr. Drew has my phone number. This was cool as hell. And you were so nice. I saved the message. I was like, you were so nice to help me. And I'm like, all right.
But I was so moved for you. And I know I had a million different emotions when I heard it.
Aww.
One of which was regret and like – please do one show a year where you tell people.
Oh my God, that's so funny.
I had that kind of feeling which was weird for me.
Right.
I had that feeling, and then I had this, oh my God, you've moved and transformed and were willing to do wherever it took you. You know what I mean?
Which
is a really important part about real growth.
Wow.
Is you don't let the fear of, oh my God, I'm not a comedian anymore. How am I going to live? You don't let that fear prevent you from growing into something else.
Well, right. I mean, because I said to myself legitimately, when this started, you know, kind of running around my brain about 4 years ago, I was like, okay, what's the worst that can happen? And now that I'm like practice coaching people, I literally say, if they're stuck, I go, what is it literally? Stop catastrophizing. What is literally the worst thing that can happen? And I said to myself, okay, I never get paid a cent again. Thank God I'm a good saver. I'm not rich, but I got money. God forbid I never make another dime.
That's the worst
thing.
Sell
my house.
Right.
Move in with my mom. I won't ever be homeless. I can type. I should write a book called At Least I Can Type because I can freaking type for a living. I go work at Starbucks. People don't understand it's all ego with these performers.
Yes, I was going to say that feels very authentic to be that in that space.
Oh, yeah, because ego used to rule my whole life. Like it was the big crowds and the money and staying at the Peninsula.
And that's fun. And that's
– of course.
It's fun, but it's not – it can't be
– it doesn't sustain you. As you know, it doesn't fill the hole.
No.
And what's funny is this week when I'm out here in L.A., I'm staying at a friend's house. I haven't done that ever because I'm like, oh, you know, I should be staying at a really nice hotel. It is so comforting and nice. And I said to myself, look at me. Don't stay at your friend's house because you have to. Do it because you want to and you can. So it feels really good to just anything that comes my way that looks kind of appealing now, as far as the life coaching, as far as just the storytelling, so people know what I really went through with food and weight and what they can do about themselves. I'm like, oh, yeah, let's do it. It sounds fun.
Can you tell us a little bit about the – without giving us the whole story necessarily, but where did it start?
I'm not sure what
an injury. Let's see your own.
Oh, my original injury, like
trauma or whatever.
It probably was that because I've tried to trace it back. Because I say I participated in all these seminars and workshops, and I go to myself, all these people are saying their parents told them they were worthless or they're pieces of shit or overpraised them. My parents neither overpraised us or underpraised us. So it was never like what they did to us.
Were they absent?
Guess what it was?
What?
No. I realized they didn't like themselves.
Oh.
So they role modeled hating themselves.
Oh.
My father allowed himself to be yelled at a lot. My mother overate. She looked in the mirror. She told me it was the saddest thing. She said to me one day in a rare moment of vulnerability, she said, even when I was walking down the aisle in my wedding dress, I wanted people to stop looking at me. So she always hated herself.
Mm.
And I said, this is very sad, but that goes to the kids.
Yeah, of
so
course.
Me and my brother and my sister, luckily my brother, you know, went away to college at 18 and sort of went so far away that he had never really moved home, even though we're all close now. So I think he kind of got, you know, away from it more. Mm. But me and my sister were still caught up in the self-hate and filling the hole with food. I always filled the hole with serial monogamy. I always had a boyfriend. God forbid I would be alone. And now it's like, oh, my God, the hole is just, as you know, I'm not good enough. And now I go, well, if I have to fill the hole with something, it's going to be self-love and part service. That's really all I can do.
And service does go a long way to closing the hole.
Oh, my God, it totally does.
Because
after my dad died, I go, oh, my God, I miss helping people. Because I tried to help him as much as I could.
I remember you went back and lived with him for 2 years, right?
And he was such a guy. Oh, my God, what a light. Like, everybody loved my dad. And very soft-spoken, very humble. One of those guys who was a painter. He was a fine artist, but he'd never sell his stuff because he said it would spoil it for him.
Wow.
He was just a gentleman, like, old school. Like, you know, with the handkerchief, that kind of guy.
He's like an Ayn Rand character.
Yeah, yeah, he really was. And I go, wow, I miss that. So how can I be of service? And I go, this food and body image stuff, it plagued me so much. I'm like, let me develop the play and now the storytelling show and now the workshops. And I go, boy, I'm making a real impact, I hope, on people who feel so alone with these food issues.
Two things. One, yelling is not normal.
Yeah.
So your mom yelling, that's kind of domestic abuse, right?
Oh, it was horrible.
Right. So we always say when kids are exposed to domestic abuse, the boys become warriors and the girls become worriers. So the girls act in and the boys act out.
Great point.
And so that may have been some of the acting in you were doing. You know?
Oh, without a doubt. Yeah. And also she role modeled overeating. So food is love. When I went away to college, there was nothing that – I was in a dorm that was horrible. It was all seniors, and I'm a freshman. First year was BC, then Syracuse.
Mm.
And I was like, okay, I still have food. Yeah, food. That's my friend. And you go, well, this is where it all kind of manifested, the food stuff. And then up and down until the weight loss surgery 6 years ago, doing that and going, okay, now the emotional eating. Let's attack that.
Right. And so when you do the surgery, sort of the protection of the body goes away.
Yes.
You know, and then you're left with the emotional stuff. With some people get very depressed. They flip out when that happens.
Oh, dude, I have a friend who lost 105 pounds also, and he said, you know what I miss eating? My feelings.
Nah.
And I'm like, that's exactly what – because, dude, do you know, an addiction specialist, it's so hard to feel. And you can't go around it. You got to go through it. So here's an example.
Yeah.
Two nights ago, I go with my family to see this Bohemian Rhapsody. Well, it strikes me so hard, not the AIDS stuff, because I didn't live through that, the freaking loneliness. I said, this Freddie Mercury. And I go, that's how I used to feel. But thank God I never went to alcohol, drugs, or crazy sex. It was always the food.
Lonely, even while you were a performer, is that what you identify with? Yeah.
And also, I think just lonely in life, of going, where's that group of friends that finally, thank God, I've developed?
Well, that was the other thing I was going to say. I said there were two things. The other thing, it feels like the trajectory to now – really, the starting line for that was the time you spent with your dad.
Oh, definitely.
And so in a weird way, that connecting with him was the model for connecting with everybody.
Totally. Because my father, he had such compassion for everybody. I remember his hospice nurse said that 2 days before he passed, he looked at her. I mean, this is when you can hardly speak with cancer. I mean, really sad. And she said to him, how you doing, Lenny? And he goes, how are you?
Mm.
So I'm like, oh, if he can act like that, I can start behaving, you know? And I just loved that he – you know what? At the end of his life, I always said for weeks, I go, I want to look in the mirror at the end of the night and go, my dad would be like, you did well.
Mm.
And honestly, most days I do. I misbehave at least 20% of the time. I mean, come on.
Meaning what? What is misbehaving?
With food, yelling, be in a mental case, be an overly crazy. But this is the thing. Thank God it's only 20%.
Right, the 80% is good.
Hopefully 10% someday.
BB plus at least.
Yeah, yeah, you know, I'm trying. You know, but it's weird because I have hot buttons still. I lash out still. But thank God, maybe once a month instead of three times a day.
Just not that it's important, but yeah. Just because I'm curious.
Yeah,
what
yeah.
are the hot buttons now?
My trigger, the last time I had a full-on freaking meltdown, a guy in the audience, this is right before I quit stand-up, told me to shut up.
And did Howard play that on the air or something?
Yeah. I talked about it. I went on TMZ and talked about
yes.
it. I loved it, but it was literally a man telling me to shut up. I have no idea why. It makes me freaking insane. So it just set me off because he goes, just shut up and do jokes. And I'm like, oh, because I never had a father who told me shut up.
Well, I'm wondering if it's more the mom piece because she was
Could
probably
be.
Telling your dad to shut up all the time. And
it's a good point.
And here's this poor guy getting that abuse. And you probably identified with that.
It's like, I'm not taking that. Like,
yeah.
You know, it's almost like I'm standing up for everybody who can't talk.
Which is your dad.
Yeah. Forgetting that I have a pretty good voice myself. You know, I'm a loudmouth. So that was crazy. But then I go, well, you know what? It was kind of funny.
Do you feel guilty afterwards?
I felt like, oh, that one I let myself go on it because I thought it was like entertaining.
Yeah.
So part of it, I felt shame. But then I go, wait a minute. This is what I do when I do my practice coaching. I feel like we hold on to it and beat ourselves up. I go, guess what? It was one night. I'm a freaking great person. I do my best every day. Let it go. So after 2 days or so, I kind of was like, okay, I don't feel bad anymore. But, I mean, what's the use of hanging on to it?
No, shame and guilt have almost no place in mental health, right?
Oh, it's worst.
But that's a pretty good job of dealing with shame. Most people, it's either they're resistant to it. It comes off them and they mm-hmm. can't ever feel it because it's too shattering.
Right, right.
Or it sticks and they can't shake it. That's most people.
Oh, no, I know. You know, shame is the root of every addiction, right?
It's in there.
Yeah.
It's in there. And I see lots of people, you know, they learn to live with it or they learn to, you know, but 3 days letting it go is pretty good. What I'm saying. That's resilient.
Even the other day, you know, I had this day of overeating and it wasn't disgusting or gross or anything. It was just like, you know, me and my family, we go to the movies. So come on, I'm not going to a movie if I don't have popcorn and sticking the straw in the butter dispenser, you know, and just really fucking sucking it down. And then we go for pizza after. The whole thing is, guess what?
It's a one day.
And you go to yourself like this.
Yeah.
I forgive myself. I move on. That's really easy now. But I also am accountable, weigh myself once a week. So I don't – you know what I find with people, especially me and anybody I talk to? I'm like, okay, you find this place between letting yourself off the hook and beating yourself up. That sweet spot of like, hey, maybe it wasn't the best, but I'm letting it go. But that whole like – letting yourself off the hook ain't good either. Then you end up like overeating 50 times a day.
Right. Completely letting yourself off the hook.
Right.
Yeah.
Which I used to do with food. Easy.
Yeah.
And yelling. I mean, you wouldn't believe it. Dude, when I used to yell at people, first of all, I have the loudest voice. I'd never do it in here because you would be dying. You'd be shattered. So I would love yelling at people and then coming home and telling the story to like whoever I was dating or married to because they were funny.
You mean yelling in the audience?
No. At people.
Oh.
Like at the Starbucks, at the People's Bank, this, that. And they were funny because I yell funny stuff, but it's still mean and off-putting. And I was like hairdressers. Like it was insane. Like still hotel clerks. Dude, after my dad died, every time I checked into a hotel, I'd say, by the way, thank you for having me again. And I'm so sorry if I yelled at you last time because I would always do this. I just had so much anger. And then my dad died.
But you had this observing part of you that can make it funny.
I was like kind of proud of myself because I sounded like mom and mom's funny.
Oh, interesting.
Right?
Yeah.
But then I go, my dad would be so disappointed in me. So then I said, let me not do this anymore. For 3 years, I think I was so perfect. But then, of course, one sneaks in here. Once a month or so. But I said, hey, it's better than three times a day. What am I going to do?
What's the latest one?
The latest one was that one in June. And then.
But that was at an audience. And
true.
It was funny.
Wait, something happened a few weeks ago. I got really mad about something. God, it escapes me.
Well,
but I legitimately did yell at somebody. And I was very ashamed of myself. It wasn't like a public thing. Or I think it was a friend. Oh, my God. It was horrible. Oh, my God. I can't even believe I'm talking about this. Okay. I went to Iceland with my niece, her mom, which is my sister-in-law, who I freaking love, and they're one of my sister-in-law's best friends. We go. It's right around the time I retire from comedy. So I'm emotional anyway.
Sure.
They had made up an itinerary that was all outdoorsy. Well, I'm too busy to look at the itinerary, and I forget. I have no control of this itinerary, and also, I fucking hate the outdoors. Like, dude, it's so cold and rainy and wet. So I'm in the worst mood, and I'm sort of feeling dragged along, even though it was always up to me to go, oh, let me change the itinerary with you.
Of course.
No, I keep my dopey mouth shut, have no boundaries. And then the last day, I fucking went nuts. I let loose so bad.
At all three of them?
No, I actually vented. This was so fucking shameful. I vented to my niece about the entire thing.
Oh, boy.
She's 18.
Yeah.
She's very mature.
Sure.
Guess what? She's not an adult.
Uh-oh.
I figured that out.
Uh-oh.
They're not adults yet.
No, not at all.
25 maybe is you can vent to.
Yeah.
I'm a fucking idiot. So I end up going, apologizing, this, that, the other. And thank God they've let it go. But dude, I had 3 months of torturing myself, and I went back to therapy. I went to life coaching. I went to a DBT specialist. I was just like, I am not yelling at people anymore, and I'm figuring out how to have boundaries.
And so does DBT help you when you get into those moments, you're mm-hmm. able to perceive other people's contents of their minds?
Yes.
You can stop yourself.
Well, DBT, to this chick, it's almost like managing distressing emotions.
Right.
So before they get nuts.
But it's also being able to keep other people in mind as they emerge, right?
Well, you know what I love about how you said that is true, because I've just started to really realize how much I'm compassionate now, where I didn't used to be.
Sure.
So of course I should have, if I hadn't been so like overwhelmed and stupid, I would have been like, oh, wait a minute. That's what they like to do. All I need to do is say, hey, I need a day at the hotel. I'll see you for dinner.
Right.
Which, by the way, on a trip to Italy 3 months later with my sister, I learned to do after DBT. And they were like, oh, that's fine.
So that's sort of the boundary part. But there's also mm-hmm. a piece when we have intense emotions, mm-hmm. it's normal to lose track of what the other person's experiencing.
Oh, yeah. Like, and why should I care about anybody but me?
Well, you're just in it.
Yeah.
It's hard to be, right. Oh, now I'll be empathic for a minute while I'm going nuts here.
Right.
But DBT right. helps you with that, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I love it.
I feel like that's one of the big benefits.
Yeah.
Because then it's harder to spiral out of control, because you're like, oh, yeah, I'm affecting that person.
Oh, that's what I didn't realize, because my sister-in-law said it perfectly. She was very upset with me, rightfully so, but upset, sad. She goes, you know, Eve thinks you're perfect.
Mm.
And, she goes, she didn't even have to say, now she knows you're not. Mm. I'm actually really glad they know I'm not.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I had been on best behavior since this kid was born. I mean, I have nieces and nephews. My one out here is 28. For 28 years, I never raised a voice.
Yeah.
So they don't know. So this nutcase comes out of that. I blame Iceland, but it really wasn't Iceland's fault. It's all me not having boundaries and not putting myself in that place.
It's partly Iceland's fault, to be fair. It's so damn cold.
I mean, what the fuck are people doing going there?
No,
it's just because it's
right?
a cheap flight. Stop it. It's not Italy. But, you know, the whole thing is, I think I can handle it now better with this DBT. And I'm not surprised you like that method, because the person who told me to get it is an addiction trait.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah,
interesting.
I called her in a panic when they were angry with me, and I said, Paige, you got to get me the right
drink. That's a good call. Because you were in distress, and DBT doesn't necessarily relieve the distress.
Oh, I know.
Yeah, it's so
yeah.
interesting. I'm glad you did that. And now talk to me about the workshops and things, and there's one coming up on January 26th in Connecticut. Is that
yeah.
your home?
Yeah. Well, I live in Connecticut in Fairfield, yeah. so we have workshops scheduled in Connecticut, in Washington, D.C.,
February 23rd,
Boston,
New York.
Yep. Sonoma Valley.
Where can they go? What website? At Lisa Lampanelli's Twitter. You'll probably be announcing them there. Is there a website where they can find more?
Yeah, every single workshop is listed on lisalampanelli.com. If you can't spell it, insultcomic.com still goes there, even though I didn't insult anybody lately since this morning.
Well, this is another product I've been talking about because it's good. It's called TheraWorks Relief. If you're one of these people that have overwhelming muscle cramps, I guarantee you, A, you know what I'm talking about, and B, you've gone to a physician and begged for some sort of relief. I've been on the receiving end of that for years. So when TheraWorks Relief came along, I was happy to be a part of
their promotion because no longer do I have to use dangerous medication to relieve these horrible symptoms where people can't sleep, they can't exercise, they can't get through their day. Therix Relief is a non-greasy foam that's clinically proven to relieve muscle cramps fast and reduce muscle soreness. With daily use, Therix Relief can prevent muscle cramps before they start. So just use it twice a day and those nocturnal cramps are gone. Full night of sleep ahead. Therix Relief only takes minutes to apply. It absorbs quickly and it works. People love it. I've been giving it to patients and family and they are swearing by it. I recommend Therix Relief. It's my choice for preventing and relieving muscle cramps. Make it yours too. Get Therix Relief in the pain relief aisle at Walmart, CVS, Rite Aid, and Walgreens, or by discussing it with your pharmacist. They are as enthused as I am. Learn more at TheraWorksRelief.com. That is Therix Relief for your muscle cramps. Well, we use a Zoom all the time here. Video conferencing has changed everything. And I don't know if you're like me. I was always sort of getting through different kinds of video conferencing technologies. And then along came Zoom. And that's it. That's where I am now. Flawless video, pin drop, clear audio. Sometimes I just use the audio for phone conferencing. Instant sharing across any device, desktops, laptops, tablet, mobile, whatever it is. And how about the first time you see 49 faces participating live on the screen? It's something. And with Zoom, you can share anything with anyone from any device. That's a Word file, a spreadsheet, a presentation deck, a YouTube video. You can do anything. Photos from your phone. Zoom is everything you wanted. They thought of everything for the video conferencing, and they created it. Zoom.us. You can even set up a green screen. Whatever you want to do. It's all there. It's flexible. And, well, if you already know Zoom and use it, you know what I'm talking about. But if you don't, find out by visiting Zoom.us. And you set up your free account today. That's it. Zoom.us. Get your free account going. It is Meet Happy with Zoom Video Communications. Again, set up that free account today at Zoom.us.
But and, yeah, the workshops are cool because you know these places like Kripalu and all these joints, like yeah. Canyon Ranch and all?
Yes.
They have these three-day workshops that deal with the subject. So I took...
The subject being?
No, a particular subject.
A subject, yeah.
So... Since food and body image struggle is my whole thing, I said, let me pair up with a yoga teacher who knows this meditation, this yoga, this stuff I can't.
Tia Martin.
Yeah, she's amazing. Yep. I couldn't care less about none of these things. She does the meditation. I close my eyes, pretend I'm doing it. I take a nap. But you got the spiritual element. We've got storytelling in it. We've got, you know, group discussion, exercises. It's so sound that – all I say is to people, look, you aren't going to like freaking lose weight. You're not going to start exercising. We're not holding you accountable. You will if you at least participate a little, find a little peace around food and body image. There's no guarantee. But guess what? You cannot go through 3 days or even a whole day or even an evening workshop and not at least, if you're open, feel a little more peaceful. That's the whole goal. What else is there?
Well, when you get the peace, all the behaviors tend to settle a bit too, right?
That's true because, you know, what's funny? I stayed the same weight, thank God, 6 years now. However, I feel more peaceful now. Even if the weight had nothing to do with it, meaning it took me 6 years to feel like, oh my God, I think I can handle food at least 80% of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Dude, my body image... There's something mentally wrong with me because I have so much good body image now. Like, I think I'm fucking awesome. Like, I'm without clothes, I'm horrible. But I will tell you, like, I'll walk by a mirror and go, you're so cute. So it's this weird thing. Once you go, I just accept me. Like, I'm not better than anyone. I'm not less. It's fine. I'll live.
Women really have trouble with that, don't they?
Oh, my God. And gay men?
Gay men, too.
We had a lot of gay men in my first one that I did, and it was, like, really sad because you're just like, oh, my God, the pressure we put on ourselves.
Well, I was just going to say part of it, though, women put pressure on one another and gay men put pressure on one another.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so who's putting pressure on the straight men? Nobody.
Nobody. They can be fucking fat. This is the thing. These men, I don't understand where they get the self-esteem. God bless them. Jimmy Big Balls, my ex-husband – he was 360 pounds when I married him. He thought he was the shit. You know, God bless him. I think because they have these moms who love them.
Yes.
You know?
Period.
Oh, yeah. That's it.
No matter what.
Nope. Jimmy, I swear to God, didn't know how to do laundry till I met him. His mother still loved him.
Thank God my mom was abusive and horrible.
I'm very happy for you. It did your wife a lot of favors right there.
It did. That's true. It's true.
It's really interesting, too, how you always see, as you know, the couples on TV, the fat husband, the hot wife, all that stuff. Where's the fat wife? Horrible-looking wife and the hot husband on TV. Where?
Hmm.
Never. Hmm. And I think we need to rectify that.
It's time.
It's about goddamn time. This is us have two fat people together. God bless, but come on.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's do something real.
So who do you want to come to these things?
Oh, you know what? Anyone who's open to just looking inside for a little bit.
Okay, it feels like more than just body image and food stuff though, right?
It's, you know what? You can literally take the exercises we do and the program we do for 3 days or for the evening or wherever they book us for. You can pretty much apply any subject. Meaning we do one on change. There's also seminars, workshops on called When It's Time to Change. Dude, she retired, my partner there, the yoga teacher, retired from being a lawyer to do this. I retired from being a stand-up comic. It's like if we can change, because don't you agree it's harder to leave a good job than a bad one?
Yes.
I mean, you're used to the money. You're used to having that little cachet that comes from
This is the part I admire so much about what you're doing, which is that being willing to do whatever it takes to become who I am.
Yeah.
You know, and people when they do therapy, oftentimes the patients want mm-hmm. to be fixed now as I am in my current situation with my current job, as I currently see myself, just fix that.
Right.
As opposed to being willing to transform and grow into whatever, whoever you're supposed to be.
Right.
Which is a very different thing.
You're right, because I couldn't do it if I was still doing comedy, because part of me felt like, you'll understand this, a lot of people won't. Okay. I don't think I was ever a comic. I think I legitimately wanted to just connect with people and connect people to each other in some way, and comedy just happened to be what I used for 30 years.
I would argue that's how a lot of comedians achieve what they're looking for, the same thing you got and did it the same way.
And now that I see connection is so much more powerful for
true connection rather than pseudo connections. Right.
Right. With small groups of women and men who do workshops with me, or like say, I do a storytelling show with different actors talking about food and weight issues, but it's really funny, but also heartfelt.
Is that is that different than these things we're talking about?
Yeah, it's called Losing It, and it's going to be in theaters all over. We did three of them this year, and it was so freaking beautiful because everybody's laughing and then crying. Uh-huh. I love that. Mm. That, and they just felt less alone when they left. Yeah. We have tape of testimonials of people just all ages, like teenage girls crying. And I'm like, oh my God, this is great. So I feel like, okay, that's the kind of stuff that really connects them to each other and to me. So I think maybe that's why I got shit from a lot of comics years ago, because they're like, oh, like maybe they sensed I was not really, I was just kind of using comedy versus me being that Seinfeld who works on that joke and crafts it so beautifully. Give a fuck less. Yeah. Throw cunt in there, I get a laugh. You know, I'm good with that.
Well, wait, what were comedians abusing you about? What they're giving
you
shit about?
Comics were so mean to me.
Why? Well, they're mean to everybody. They're mean to each other crazy. Right?
And I couldn't hang. See, that's the thing. I'm not. I'm on stage, yes. Insult, great. Everybody knows I'm kidding. Intention is felt. Beautiful. When I'm off stage, I'm not funny. I'm like amusing and I'm fun and I have game night. And I'm like just really basic. But they would want to spar. Dude, I would go home every night from that comedy cellar and I would be bawling because I'd be like, oh my God, they're so mean to me.
Now, they all would sit at that table upstairs, right?
Oh, that fucking table. Yeah. Guess what I used to do? I'm not even lying to you. I would bring, this is years ago, before email lists were big. You'd have to send postcards to people.
So let me very, very flesh that. We're talking about the comedy cellar in Greenwich Village, and it's a tiny little place downstairs, and upstairs there's this table at the top of the stairs where the comedians sit after they have their sets.
I'd never sit with them because they were so mean to me. So what I would do is I took my gay friend and my other friend, this assistant chick I had, who were also comics, and I let them hang with me, and we'd be addressing postcards like to send to people about a show coming up or something. I just bring a book. I'd do anything to not sit with these people, and I was so miserable. And I'd go home, and I had a boyfriend at the time who was like, you want me to go down there and fucking straighten them out? And I was like, no. And you know what a shrink said to me? And I love this because she's right. She said, they're your best teachers. So she goes, now you'll know how to not treat people. And also, you'll see how strong you are if you can go there every night and not cancel those spots. And she was right.
And did you end up sitting with them?
No.
No. But you, I mean, you'd still be around them.
Yeah. I was still like, I'm not performing at the best club in the world because of this.
Yes.
So now, even on the dopey little practice coaching sessions I'm doing with people, that whole like, it doesn't happen to you, it happens for you, is so huge. Because it's like, we can all sit there and bemoan our sad life. like your father abusing you. That happened for you to learn, for you to have empathy and compassion. Me hearing my mom yelling, now that happened for me to develop the strength.
It's
but also
not, that's not a contract I've heard before, but I love it.
Really?
I've not heard that. Yeah.
I'm
isn't
so fucking smarter than Dr.
It's
Girl.
Good.
No,
I like it.
No, but isn't it so interesting? Because think about it. Have you ever done anything there's not a lesson in? Have you ever lost anything that you really should have gotten? No. You got spared that. Say you went for a TV show. I've gotten so many TV deals. Thank God they didn't get on TV. Because suppose I'd have made an asshole out of myself.
Yeah.
The universe was looking out for me.
Well, now there's a whole layer to what you're getting into now that's very philosophical, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. Which is kind of cool.
Which is super cool.
Yeah.
I'm attracted to this part of what you're doing too now.
Yeah.
Which is not – it's not strictly speaking mental health or self-improvement. It's philosophical.
Well, it's kind of combining like spirituality.
Yeah.
Because it really is like – going, well, of course the universe knows what's going to happen. Like I don't say God, God, God because I don't know. You know, I'm not like really into God or nothing. But I'm like, oh, well, it's supposed to turn out that way, so it will.
The great magnet.
Yeah.
Whatever. But this part, I actually personally have a little trouble with this part myself, which is, you know, not worrying about where you're going. I don't even know how to – I get confused about it even. It's like I worry about going rather than where I'm going to go. You know what I mean? Where I'm going to go is where I'm going to go. And I can't let go.
But what do you worry about going? Like what's the worry?
It's like it feels like this free-floating anxiety and controlling and that kind of nonsense.
Well, our whole control problem.
Yeah.
I mean, first of all, we're doers.
Yeah.
This is why, by the way, I like to coach straight men. You would not fucking believe. I'm sorry, listeners, but women – fucking take their time and I can't take it. They call you and they're like yentering it up.
What
talking
do you mean?
About, no, they want to complain a lot.
Well, they like, they're very rewarded in a sense of biological gratification from talking.
Yeah, I don't like that.
Men don't have that.
I'm kind of a guy coach.
Yeah.
Like the two straight guys that I practice coach with, these guys freaking do shit. Like I don't even give them the assignment until like right at the end. And I'm just like, okay, maybe you want to make a list of things that no longer serve you. And we can talk about like things to replace them with next week. Okay, fine. This fucking guy, he's like, okay, here's my list. Adderall, alcohol, Ambien, two women I'm dating. And I go, okay, let's talk about eliminating one of those. What fear comes up when you think about it? By the end of the phone call, he's like, that's it. All five of them. I'm making it happen this week. You're going to be so proud of me next week. Guaranteed, I talked to him this Thursday. He's going to be done with all of them. Because do you think also when a straight guy who's a tough guy sort of calls for help, it's the last ditch effort, meaning they really want help. Women sometimes like to enter it up.
Yes, especially if he's not therapeutically inclined. You know what I mean? If it's like this is a big deal for him, and I don't like this stuff, and it's goofy.
Yeah. He resisted at first, this guy Wayne. This was great because check this out. The real reason I think he got into it because he has a very severely autistic son, and he really was sad that he didn't have the money to maybe give this kid like a lifelong home or whatever. So he was desperate. I mean, his email to me was fucking desperate. I said, oh, this is good to practice with this guy. Within 10 minutes, he's sobbing. Mm-hmm. I go, oh, this guy's open. But at first, it was a lot of bluster and cursing, and then it was like the crying, and then that was it. He was like, I'm moving forward.
Where's he live?
I don't even know. Because, somewhere on the East Coast, we just talk on the phone.
I'm wondering if that kind of guy, the blustery, big personalities, are the ones that will be your specialty.
You know what? Somebody said that to me. I love these guys.
Yeah, yeah. They seem to I can see it, and I can see how they would respond to you. It makes sense to me.
Yeah, because I have a lot of empathy. I'm quiet, but then I'll tell them sort of like – I'll lead them in a direction. And
they're also used by putting people off with all that bullshit, and you don't even like budge. It doesn't even affect you.
What's funny, you would love this. I'm sure my coaching teacher wouldn't be thrilled that I said this, but he said something about he was afraid his business was going to fail again.
Mm.
And I go, okay, tell me about the first time you ever felt like a failure. I don't know why I asked him that. And he told me something with his dad or whatever. Then he told me how his wife never thanks him for anything. And I go, I have a hunch, because this is what we're supposed to say in class. I have a hunch. Do you mind if I tell it to you? He goes, no, please. And I go, I have a hunch you married your father. Tell me where I'm wrong. He goes, oh, my God. I fucking married my father. He couldn't stop talking about it. And I love that type of response because right. he didn't go, no.
Yeah.
I have these women. Well, I don't think. And I just go, oh, I can't. Like, I can't. And I have a gay guy too. Okay, tell me how you do this. This one. God bless him. He tells me he wants to write a book. Mm. And I'm going to give him the spark to write this book. I said, okay. I hear his story. The first time he was told he should write a book was 10 years old. He's 57 now. Uh-oh. I said, when's the last time somebody told you you should write a book? A week ago, that's when I contacted you. And I go, I have a hunch. Do you mind? And he said, no. He goes, I go, you don't want to write this book. And he goes, no, I want to write it. And I go, okay, let's figure out how. Because he's so fucking resistant. He doesn't run. Am I right? He don't want to write that
right.
book.
The other way to do that is to go, I'm wondering.
Yeah.
You sort of wondering a lot. I'm wondering what the resistance. Yeah. It's called therapeutic wonderment. And
I love that.
Oh, yeah. And people, you know, we live in this world where everyone thinks it's supposed to be like Dr. Phil. We go, don't you know what you're doing? Yeah. That goes nowhere.
Exactly.
That is not something that anybody would ever do.
Right, right.
Because the force fields go up and you're not going anywhere with whoever you're trying to change.
Sure.
As opposed to going, even especially when you know the answer, just go, I wonder what it means that you would take you to age 57 to have to get around to this.
Yeah.
I wonder if there's something about writing a book that – I wonder what that might be.
And that's a really good way to put it because he would have probably, you know, had not as much of the shield come up.
Yeah.
Now I'm stuck coaching this guy on writing this fucking book, which I found the freaking subject boring anyway.
And the way to do it is just structure the hell out of it. Just, you know, if an hour every day, you sit down and see what you get.
Yeah.
And see where you – then you can talk about how he feels about it and
right.
see if something real comes up.
Well, you know what she says? I love this. It's Martha Beck coaching, and she's fucking phenomenal. And she says, therapy is for the worried sick. Life coaching is for the worried well. So basically, like – you can't – we're not supposed to deal with real mental cases.
Right. And it's interesting. I you know, talked to some of my psychiatric colleagues who thinks we need like different categories now. Mm. We need sort of actualization categories and we need coaching categories for the
yep.
well.
Yep.
And we – you know, because these are all different things and none of them are about illness.
Yeah, right.
And even Freud he thought his project was to make the distinction between – ordinary misery and real pathology.
Oh, wow.
That's what he thought he was doing.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, what is – because life – there's a certain amount of ordinary misery with life and coaching is about managing and living with that and changing
yes.
that. Illness is when you need a doctor.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, you know, we had to learn early on. Like there are some patients you just have to say, I'm sorry, this isn't in my wheelhouse. I'm sorry I can refer you out. You know, how to deal with potentially if you think someone's going to kill themselves.
No,
like this is all crazy shit.
No.
You didn't sign up for.
If there's impairment of functioning, mm-hmm. if there's active suicidal mm-hmm. or homicidal ideation or even mm-hmm. mild, if there's thought disturbances, you're hallucinating, hearing voices,
right.
blah, blah, blah.
Right.
You know, then, yeah, you need professional help. And by the way, coaching may still also be useful on the side after you get stable.
After,
you
know? Exactly.
Yeah.
It's pretty wild. It's like I realize I need both. So some people just need both.
Mm-hmm.
But, boy, it's so interesting to me. Like all this stuff is really interesting. Like I love that I still get the feeling – or I get the feeling from all these projects – that I used to when I did comedy, when I was really loving it.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, wow, it's like a second life.
Well, isn't that interesting?
Yeah, it's fun.
That's nice to have two careers, right?
Right. At three, actually, because I used to be a journalist. Then I was a comic and then this. And I think they used to say that people would say, I think years ago, have three jobs in their life and now they have three careers. So
I just
like,
think it's – I think you serve your time in one career and I think it's satisfying to create another one.
Yeah.
You don't feel – and I think people used to get stuck in their career and just assume that they had to do it till retirement.
Right.
And the whole
right.
idea of retirement is even sort of in flux right now. Like think
yeah.
about it. You could do this indefinitely what you're doing.
Yeah. And what I said, it was funny. I really thought I was going to just retire and sit around on the beach with my dog because like, okay, I saved money. It's fine. And like 2 months later, 2 weeks later, I was like, Jesus Christ, I'm going to kill myself. I really want to do something that impacts people. But this was such an it just like flew out of my heart. I think that you just got to
listen.
In
a moment or did it sort of come to you?
Sort of. I always sort of knew it. But, you know, then you get like, oh, do I really have to? Then I'll have to fucking do social media. Then I got to fucking do this. It all disappeared one day, and I said, make all that fun. So, all the publicity and the social media.
Tell me about that moment. Where was it? Where were you?
Oh, God. I'm picturing literally my third floor of my house. I live on the water. So the third floor is so high up that it looks like you're on a boat. You know, so you don't even – you see just sky and a little bit of water. And I just watched the entire, I think, what, 7 seasons of Mad Men, all the seasons of Walking Dead. Like, I was just like – I had the time off. I said, finally, you got the time off. And I said, I bet if I learn to have fun with this, it'll be okay.
And this being coaching.
It was – all a combination. It was like storytelling, coaching. And I'd start making little notes. I'd write down like Lisa storytelling show, life coaching ? And then I was like, okay, workshops. And that's the one that I experimented with first. It was so much fun.
What'd you do?
I went to a seminar at Kripalu on how to develop transformational workshops.
Oh my gosh. I know there's that kind of thing out there.
Yeah. They do a three certification.
So you think of it as a
transformational.
Oh, this is exciting. So you see it really as a transformational workshop. That's really what these are.
Because what they teach you basically is like, yeah, you could do an educational one or an instructional workshop. You want to transform lives and your own. The whole key to this is healing yourself through teaching people.
Mm.
So I basically, after I give a weekend workshop, say, should be in a better place with my shit like they hopefully will be. So, you know, every shrink, every life coach has a huge amount of problems. I mean, everybody would tell you they have all the answers. Don't hire that asshole.
Right.
So I go, wow, I'm going to take this course and see how to develop those. And you have to really – it's intense because you have to develop them to appeal to all 4 personality types, you know, earth, water, fire, and wind. And it's just like, oh, shit, earth people want worksheets. Air people want, discussion or whatever it is,
Yeah.
So you really have to structure the workshop so all 4 types are satisfied. So that's why we had to take this, me and this Taya, and learn how to develop the workshop properly so people don't leave going, all we did was write shit, you know?
Right. They have to experience something.
Yeah. And, I mean, they all say they're like, making headway. So, and some of them want private coaching after that. So I'm like, oh, this is pretty cool.
That's nice.
Yeah.
That's got to be fun.
Yeah.
And well, that's going to get busy.
What do you think about this? I'm going to ask your opinion. There was a shrink in Connecticut that reached out to me because she, heard me on Stern talking about this body image stuff. And she goes, I have 2 clients who have major food addictions and body problems. And I'm going to see if they want to do some coaching with you. I said, okay. She emails me today and she's like, oh, I talked to my 2 clients. They very much want to meet with you. They could do it over Skype or phone which I love because I don't want to go out of the house. So she goes, would you like to, with their permission, sit down on a session with me and them and learn what it's about and then take the life coaching from there? This is the right way to do it, right?
Yes, yes.
Okay, good. Because again,
if the patient's up for it.
Oh, yeah, no, both of them were like really into it. Yeah. And I go, oh, this is so good to say yes to like something weird I never thought would come along. It just seems in line with what I'm supposed to do with the openness I'm supposed to be having.
Yes.
Well, if you're looking to buy a car, you are inundated with terms that, of course, confuse. I always think they're meant to confuse, like MSRP and list price and invoice price. Dealer price, what does it all mean? I still don't know. What I want is the price that you're going to pay. And that is why True Car has introduced True Price. They make it easy, as they always do. You will know exactly what you'll pay for the car you want, including fees and accessories, everything, before you get to the True Car dealer. And True Car dealers show you that true price on cars like the one you want, all from the comfort of your home. And you know it's a great price because True Car dealers show what other people paid for the same car you want. And they know you're shopping the True Car certified dealers, so they set their true price competitively so they can win your business. So you see that scattergram, you see what other people paid, you lock in a price, and what you are locking in is not just the actual price, you're actually locking in an actual vehicle on that True Car certified dealer's lot. It's the true price. So when you're ready to buy new or used, don't forget, used car, exact same thing. Visit True Car to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features not available in all states. Well, this is another product I've been talking about because it's good. It's called TheraWorks Relief. If you're one of these people that have overwhelming muscle cramps, I guarantee you, A, you know what I'm talking about, and B, you've gone to a physician and begged for some sort of relief. I've been on the receiving end of that for years. So when TheraWorks Relief came along, I was happy to be a part of their promotion, because no longer do I have to use dangerous medication to relieve these horrible symptoms where people can't sleep, they can't exercise, they can't get through their day. Therix Relief is a non-greasy foam that's clinically proven to relieve muscle cramps fast and reduce muscle soreness. With daily use, Therix Relief can prevent muscle cramps before they start. So just use it twice a day and those nocturnal cramps are gone. Full night of sleep ahead. Therix Relief only takes minutes to apply. It absorbs quickly and it works. People love it. I've been giving it to patients and family, and they are swearing by it. I recommend Therix Relief. It's my choice for preventing and relieving muscle cramps. Make it yours too. Get Therix Relief in the pain relief aisle at Walmart, CVS, Rite Aid, and Walgreens, or by discussing it with your pharmacist. They are as enthused as I am. Learn more at TheraWorksRelief.com. That is TheraWorks Relief for your muscle cramps.
I'm just wondering.
I like this. No, that's good. Please.
I'm wondering what the psychiatrist has in mind of bringing you into the session, and I mm-hmm. don't want her to overwhelm you with a lot of material about whatever the mental health stuff is that she's probably going to talk to you about.
Right.
Unless you're interested in that.
You know what's weird?
Yeah.
If I like to study, I would decide to go and be a shrink.
Okay.
Not a medical one.
Yeah, I understand. So just be open and curious and ask lots of questions and let the psychiatrist know that this is not something you have a lot of fund of knowledge in, mm-hmm. but you are wide open and want to learn more and you are effective as a coach.
Cool,
that's it.
Cool.
I think that's the way to approach it. Because I think that what you're going to see is psychiatrists walking you through symptomatology and diagnostic constructs.
And then
it's all right. They'll do it. And then the patient talking about what she is experiencing.
Right.
You'll get it.
What, can I say something? You know what's really interesting? I was talking here about I'm giving workshops in feeling stuck or whatever and helping people change. And I swear to God, when I thought out in the lobby, I was like, oh, you know, boy, I really like all this head shrinking stuff. If I had more years left, I'd become a psychologist. And I'm like, I'm having a limiting belief.
Right.
And I'm supposed to be taking that away from other people, help them through their limiting beliefs, but I still have some.
You could probably do an MFT in 2 years if you went full time.
Do I have to study?
Quite a bit.
See, because when
I did
that.
But you might dig it if you're passionately involved in the material.
You're
you
right. Because when I was at that Yale summer course I did on acting, because I need to prepare to act as myself, and I was so terrible at this studying that I had my assistant write my paper on the Crucible. And I tell you what, people know this. I've been public about it. Even Yale knows and they laugh because it's a summer course. What do they give a shit? But let me tell you, she got me an A.
She understood that John Proctor.
She was very good about it. But so you think if it's a passionate subject, I might not be skeeved.
You might not be. Personally, I always have these weird fantasies about going back to school and then being fearful that my brain won't work the way it used to.
It doesn't.
Yeah.
And
it won't absorb stuff. Absorb stuff the way it used to, and that would freak me out.
Right.
But I do believe that you can adapt to that. You can accommodate that. And if it's something you really want to learn, I mean.
Well, how educated are you? Don't you get a medical license?
Yeah.
What do you have to go to school for?
No, I fantasize about going back and becoming a hospitalist or going to certain subspecialty things or stuff. I just fantasize about that stuff. Whenever I get frustrated with what I'm doing, I'll go, I'll go back and do that critical care stuff again.
Right.
And then I'm like, oh my God, would my brain work well enough? Or,
right.
I don't know, just a weird little fantasy that drifts through me once in a while.
Sure.
I'm certain it would.
Do you ever – you know what you said?
In fact, I did all my MKSAP and continuing medical education over Thanksgiving weekend. I did a whole shitload of it. It was pretty good. My brain was working.
Oh, so you're still
working.
On all cylinders.
Yeah.
Now, this general anxiety that we feel, like you said, it's kind of just like a general worry.
Mm-hmm.
What do we do about it? Do we just like take a breath, talk ourselves?
I can tell you I think anxiety is a pretty protean phenomenon, okay? Mm-hmm. And for me, I have the genetics, so I have a generalized anxiety towards panic, and I get mm-hmm. panic easily. Mm-hmm. And before therapy for me, I also was disconnected from feeling states. I had difficulty. Mm-hmm. I couldn't access feelings. In therapy, I was able to connect to feelings. Mm-hmm. And when I connected to feelings, my anxiety reduced markedly, and it no longer bothered me.
Mm. That's really
so
good.
Even though I have it, it just doesn't – it's just sort of a constitutional feature. You know what I mean?
So you just accept that about yourself.
It doesn't bother me.
Wow.
It's – and yeah, it used to be terrible. But and it's a tendency I have. It's a lot less again. So for me, anxiety was just something I felt as a substitute for feelings.
Wow.
Because I couldn't access feelings, so I could only feel anxiety. That's all I could feel. And it was some sort of bodily-based reaction to being disconnected from my affects.
How did you get access to the feelings?
So
therapy
for
and stuff?
Me, yeah, it was something sort of in the zone of what's called emotionally focused therapy, where somebody just really focused on me and really listened to me, and I just tried to talk about feelings, and she would reflect.
Wow.
She would use her body like a antenna and just sort of metabolize things and reflect them back to me. So I would sort of get them. You know what I mean? Because it's hard to, it's a process very mysterious, very hard to describe,
except.
It was very important for me to be experienced, to be felt.
The
experience of being felt by another person allowed me to feel myself. Let's put it that
way.
Oh,
wow. You know what's funny? You know how many people think you're the perfect person?
Yeah, I ain't.
No, but isn't that great though?
No.
I don't mean it in a bad way. I don't mean it in like, oh, he's a saint. But you, I love that you now, and I'm sure you always have, talk about these things you had to work on and still do. I love that.
We're all just people.
I know.
We're all just people. This is, you know, this is what I say all the time. It's like I have my own shortcomings and my own things shit I deal with. Mm-hmm. I have this wonderful training and experience. So I've got this very specialized ability and experience of human beings that I'm so grateful for, and I have to share it and use it and that kind of stuff. But it doesn't mean I don't have my own shit.
Yeah, I guess we all do.
Oh, absolutely. But the good news with me is that it doesn't bother me.
Yeah.
It doesn't bother me. And not everyone has anxiety. Listen, if you didn't have anxiety, you're a psychopath, sociopath.
Yeah, right.
So let's be grateful that we have some anxiety.
Right. Well, I have a friend who says the greatest expression, he's like, we're all just dented cans.
Yeah.
And some of us are trying to bang the dents out. Other people aren't. Thank God we're trying to bang it out.
Well, and today you enhanced something for me, this happening for you, not just to you. Because even though, you know, I can joke about some of the emotional abuse stuff that I went through, still happened to me. I'm still pissed about it.
Yeah.
But it did also happen for me. So I'm not sure I can replace for me with to me. But I can say also happened for me.
Well, that's really good because you would never be helping the amount of people without that.
No, I know.
I mean, there's no way. And think of how many – I know you're not an egomaniac. I know you're not that guy. But, I mean, a lot of fucking people have been helped by you. So
I hope so. That's all I want on my tombstone is he made a difference. That's all I want.
And it already can be. That's what's so great. It's like what we strive for isn't really – you know, because it's not ego-based anymore. It used to be with me very ego-based.
There's a funny I'm having an experience here talking to you, and it's about me.
Yeah.
So you ready for me to talk about me for a second?
Of course.
which is I used to ask my therapist always, am I this? Do I look a certain way? Tell me about me, because I never had that reflected from my mother or parents. Oh. They never would give me anything except, why aren't you doing this? Why aren't you doing more? Mm-hmm. And that was not really part of my therapy there, because my therapy has had exquisite boundaries and just held them and wouldn't gratify me in any way. And I think that was the right thing for that therapy. But I do feel like I sure would like a coach telling me what's good, you know, what works, and to coach me up to be my best. Isn't that what a coach can do?
Yeah,
be your best, right?
Sure.
And so it's just I'm having this experience listening to you like, oh, I would love – that would be so great to have that. So
yeah,
I'm sure I'm not alone in – hearing this, that millions of other people must be feeling the same way.
Right.
Now, you're going to get too busy.
Well, I don't know. Am I? Well, you know what I think?
Thankfully, you're in Connecticut,
you're right.
Not New York City, because you get too busy there.
Well, the thing about me is I think my problem is here. You can help me with this. I take on a lot of things that sound fun, and I love doing all of them now.
Mm.
I need a balanced day. I think my life is balanced because I'll be like, busy for 4 weeks. Like since Stern, it has literally been nonstop, barely sleep, but it's been all fucking great. But then I'll have the weeks of, oh my God, 3 weeks off, thank God.
Mm.
I don't like that.
No, you need
I like
need
a
more.
Balanced day.
Yeah.
How do you get that?
Well, you're going to have to structure it.
So basically I got to go, okay, 4 hours of work, 4 hours of
And if, you know, even though six people want me to see them, I'm just going to have to learn to say no. Maybe it's easier for you to say no. I personally had years of trouble saying
that's
no.
That's rough.
But you just got to do it. You can get good at it. You have to practice it.
Well, also, do you think saying no is a lot of scarcity thinking? Like, oh my God, if I say no, I won't get another offer?
Yes, that's part of it. Mm-hmm. And that, especially early on, that's very, very normal.
Yeah.
But it's also, maybe not as the way I am, but it's hard to disappoint people. I find that very difficult. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, then I love that, how we're so ego driven that we're like, I'm the last coach on earth. How are they going to survive without little old me?
Exactly the way I think about it. There'll be other people. They have something else. And I'm just full. And I couldn't. Here's how I think about it now is I couldn't do a good job for that person. I'm too busy.
Oh, that's interesting. That's true.
And that's not okay for me to do a job not well done.
Right, so, because it would be kind of like if you're looking at the clock going, oh, boy, this other one's got to be squeezed in. It's no good.
No, you're not going to be fully present. So.
Now, tell me, as a moral person, am I doing this right? I'll tell you what it is. Okay, so not certified yet, practice coach. These people know I'm not certified. I have a 10-minute phone call with them before I even take them on. I go, listen, because it's practice, remember, you have that in your head, I'm only charging you practice rate, which is $25 to $50 depending on your job, and you Venmo it to me, then I give it to a charity. Because, come on, do I need $50? Come on.
That's nice.
Not be a schnurrer about it.
That's nice.
So,
and you want them invested in it so that you want them
to – you have to charge something.
Right.
So do you think that's a moral way to do this? I do.
100%. The only thing I would want some sort of supervising something, somebody you could go back to and reflect on what's happening with, like a supervisor.
So maybe I can tape some sessions and I'll tell them, obviously.
Tape
or just say, hey, am I doing this right?
Or just, you don't need to tape it. Just go back to your, I mean, I'm sure there are people that supervise these things and just get a supervising session, you know, every so often.
Yeah.
And then you're done. Then you're completing this. Because that's how people become great.
Yeah.
And that's how we give people their clinical hours. It's not, you know, I spent years and years and years under attendings and things doing stuff. And some of it I made lots of decisions on my own and would go back to them. I would actually tell them the next day what I did.
Okay.
But I had that supervision.
Okay.
And so it's important.
That's really smart. Okay, thank you. Because, and again, I have this weird, again, scarcity thinking of like, oh, my God. Not scarcity. Low self-worth feeling of like, oh, my God, when I'm really certified, like, I can't ask for too much money. I mean, I can't. I mean, I'm just me.
Yeah, I have that problem too.
You did too?
Yeah, I still have it. Taking money from people for service is really awkward, very uncomfortable.
Right.
And I, you know, when I was treating addicts, alcoholics, I never really made a living there. It was just sort of a job of passion.
Yeah.
But are there insurances that will cover that kind of thing? It feels better when third parties pay for it.
I wish. Like, but part of me goes, so what? Like, you know what?
Look, they want it and they're willing to pay for it and they get getting something good out of it.
Yeah.
You've got to know that you're helping people and that if they weren't getting something out of it, they'd stop. They'd wrap it up.
Right. Yeah. And you know what the thing is? I'll work on that as they're working on this stuff.
Yeah.
And hopefully it'll kind of converge and we'll each get better.
And fortunately, you're not business motivated for this.
No.
It's just you want to do what's fair and what's appropriate and be compensated for your professional work. And that's that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of – this is so cool to have just a whole new world.
I'm so excited for you. I'm still conflicted. I still at least want one. I would do shows one comedy show a year. It's like, please, Lisa, don't leave us. But it can't be about us.
Well, I will tell you, honestly, and I mean this, when my show, my storytelling show, comes to town, you have to see it. And I'll 100%. Tell you why. You will laugh. I challenge that. I would put my money on this, that you will laugh just as hard. But then also leave and go, wow, I felt something too.
I can't wait.
Yeah. Because it's kind of interesting to go, I'm still doing – I can't shake the comedy thing. You just can't. It's when you're telling a story, humor comes out.
Yes.
Because what happened was funny in hindsight. So I just love that it's put together that way.
But humor is how you connect. It's a way of connecting. It's a kicking the door open.
Yeah.
Is it going to be out here in Los Angeles or New York? Where is it going to be?
All over the country next year. So the dates will be on lisalampanelli.com.
Okay. I got to go.
Yeah. I would love that. You're my special guest.
Oh, my God. I can't wait. where is it going to be out here? Do you know?
Oh, not yet.
Like big rooms, big theaters and stuff?
I want to shoot for, at first, 500 because you know what? It's intimate. It's storytelling.
Yes.
We do have a booking that I didn't announce yet, that I can't announce yet, that's at a 2,500-seat place.
Yeah.
It seems a little big for this kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
But I even said to the guy, look, you know, we're going to try it because who turns down that kind of money? But then you go, okay. But I have a feeling. I've done it at rooms that are about 500 and that's perfect.
Oh, I can't wait.
It's really nice.
I'm so happy for you, Lisa. Congratulations.
Oh, I can't even tell you how grateful I am that you got in touch with me. This is so fantastic.
And this is sort of a closing thought, but you know when people are in the right zone when they feel grateful.
Oh, yes.
That's when I know that people are doing what they should be doing because they're so grateful to be doing it for the opportunity. And that gratitude is such a healthy emotion. So
isn't it the best? Doesn't it kind of counteract almost everything?
Because
they say gratitude and resentment can't coexist.
No, it's pretty hard. And when gratitude bubbles up, you know, for me, it's like a guidepost. Like, oh, I must be sort of okay because I'm feeling pretty grateful.
Right?
So, yes.
Like here I was in West Hollywood in my friend's apartment, tiny apartment, driving their freaking dopey Prius, and I'm feeling all grateful. I'm like, what the hell happened to Lisa Lampanelli?
All right, we'll leave it at that.
I love you, buddy.
Thank you, Lisa. Love you, too. Bye. See you next time.
For call-in times and topics, follow the show on Twitter at Dr. Drew Podcast. That's D-R-D-R-E-W Podcast. The music from today's episode can be found on the swinging sounds of the Dr. Drew Podcast, now available on iTunes. And while you're there, don't forget to rate the show. The Dr. Drew Podcast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana and Gary Smith. For more information, go to drdrew.com. All conversation and information exchanged during the participation in the Dr. Drew Podcast is intended for educational and entertainment purposes only. Do not confuse this with treatment or medical advice or direction. Nothing on these podcasts supplement or supersede the relationship and direction of your medical caretakers. Although Dr. Drew is a licensed physician with specialty board certifications by the American Board of Internal Medicine and the American Board of Addiction Medicine, he is not functioning as a physician in this environment. The same applies to any professionals who may appear on the podcast or drdrew.com.